Our next case is 21-1031 Laufer versus Looper. Mr. Bacon for the appellant, you may proceed.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. My name is Tom Bacon. I'm the attorney for the plaintiff appellant, Ms. Laufer. This presents an issue as to whether or not a disabled person who reviews a hotel's online reservation service that fails to comply with the regulation suffers actionable injury, or whether a court may or must impose the additional requirement that they intend to book a room at the hotel. Courts are, the division between the courts turns on their interpretation of which Supreme Court opinion applies. Is it Havens Realty or is it Spokio? And most of those decisions, almost all of them, came out before the court in TransUnion clarified the issue that Spokio does not apply to discrimination cases. Spokio had talked about two different sorts of statutory injury. One is where Congress creates an injury by statute that appears as an injury on its face, but is not related to any sort of real injury that exists in the real world. In Spokio, the involved inaccurate information on a credit report in technical violation of the Fair Credit Reporting Act, but it was benign information. It didn't harm the plaintiff in any way. It just simply portrayed him in a different way. And the Supreme Court likened that to an incorrect zip code on a credit report. But Spokio, by contrast, also discussed the other sorts of statute that Congress can create into a concrete, de facto, and cognizable injury. And that is where it is related to a harm that existed in the real world, even if it wasn't previously actionable. It did not cite discrimination as the example. TransUnion did, and it cited Spokio for that point, and the one example that it gave was discriminatory treatment. If we went back to prior,
tell us the specific language you're referring to there. Where you said that TransUnion distinguished discrimination cases.
If we, I'm referring to, I'm using the Supreme Court reporter, 141 Supreme Court at the page break between 2204 and 2205. And if we look at the last sentence first, where it discusses the two sorts of statutes, it says that even though Congress may elevate harms that exist in the real world before Congress recognizes them to actionable status, that's on the one hand, it may not simply enact an injury into existence that was not related in any way to an actual harm. So there's a difference between such as discrimination, which was not actionable until the statute made it actionable, but it was a harm in the real world, versus something that was not a harm in the real world, such as an incorrect zip code on a credit report. And if we go back further into the, you know, if we go back a couple of sentences, it quotes Spokio and it says, Congress may elevate to the status of legally cognizable injuries, concrete de facto injuries that were previously inadequate at law. It cites Spokio, it cites Lujan, and then it cites Allen versus Wright, and in parentheses, discriminatory treatment. So in other words, discriminatory treatment is a separate body of law. To add a little bit more clarification to that, Spokio gave one example as the exception to the rule, and that was being deprived of the right to information. And it cited Aikens and Public Citizen, and Aikens cited Havens Realty. TransUnion then, when it said that that doesn't apply to TransUnion because that was not about being deprived of the right to information, but then went on to talk about the need for downstream consequences. So the question is whether or not it eroded Spokio on that one point. And on that point, it cited the Seventh Circuit's opinion in Casillas and the 11th Circuit's opinion in Tritchell. both of those cases made that point, but they additionally analyzed whether or not they could impose a downstream consequences requirement for being deprived of the right to information, or did Havens Realty prevent them from doing that? Because Havens Realty holds the opposite. There aren't any downstream consequences in Havens Realty. And they said that no, Havens Realty does not apply because Havens Realty is a discrimination case. And Trichel and Casillas involved the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act. Well,
you know, there's really, if I could jump in a little bit, really on your argument, the informational harm or informational injuries for all effects, a per se finding, and really anybody in the world, whether they're disabled or not, if they access this website, they have a lawsuit that they can file, right? I mean, you don't have to, you can be anywhere. You don't have to be, have any belief or intention to travel to Craig, Colorado or the state. You don't even have to have an intention to book a room on the website. There's really an unbounded class of plaintiffs here. And I'm just looking for the limiting principle in your argument. I don't think there is one.
There's several limiting principles. First, for example, pretend, you know, in my state review it, I'm not disabled, and my neighbor who is disabled reviews it. I am not discriminated against. I'm not denied full and equal treatment of goods or services or privileges or advantages on the basis of a disability. So I'm not within the protected group. The Supreme Court or the 11th Circuit decision in Siesta, which came out just before TransUnion, cited that and said, even if the plaintiff is a tester, that they suffered stigmatic injury, as long as they are within the protected group and they personally encountered the discriminatory website. In the context of
What if you're calling on behalf of your disabled neighbor?
If I'm filing on behalf of my disabled neighbor?
Yeah, you're accessing the website for your disabled neighbor. Can you become a plaintiff?
I don't know the answer. That's not a case that I would file. I think one could read into 12888 and there's some language to that effect. If I'm not their custodian or their ward, if the neighbor is not my child who is disabled, I personally don't encounter discrimination if I'm looking at it.
Harm's an informational harm. Why do you need to concede your point?
It's the operative language is in section 12888 and in section 12182A on the basis of disability. In other words, I'm not deprived any full and equal enjoyment of any service or privilege or advantage of a place of public accommodation on the basis of any disability. A disabled person is.
How is your neighbor injured by looking at the website? For that matter, how is Ms. Lawford if they're not planning to stay at the hotel?
The question goes back to is Havens Realty overturned?
No, I'm just asking, what's the injury? I'm not asking for a case or anything. What is the injury you're alleging here?
The injury is that their hotels market nationally. They reach out nationally. They market nationally to everybody in the country. The nature of the injury is that they're deprived of a service, a privilege, or advantage.
But they aren't if they're not going to go to the hotel. Where's the deprivation?
How would that be distinguishable from the Jeffries plaintiff in the Tandy case, who solely tested the system?
Again, I'm looking for you to articulate the injury suffered here. What is it?
The injury suffered is that they are unable to, Congress also in 12101 set out.
No. Factually, what is the injury in fact? Not an injury in law. What is the injury in fact?
They encounter a discriminatory online reservation system that fails to provide them information as to whether or not the hotel is accessible to them.
What is the injury if they're not going to go there? I mean, what if your neighbor just happens to pick up the newspaper and the Elk Run Inn has an ad there that says the exact same thing? They see it, they put it down. Do they have a federal lawsuit?
It would depend on whether or not they meet the criteria of the statute and additional information is required.
Counsel, do they have an injury that would give them standing to bring a lawsuit?
If, for example, a person who lives in Hawaii finds out that there is a school in Maine, this is the example that some courts give, that segregates against people of his class, then the courts have said, well, he doesn't have an injury. But in that case, where is the injury within the meaning of the statute encountered? And if it's a physical segregation, he doesn't encounter segregation or discrimination until he goes to that place. In the situation of an online reservation service, a disabled person suffers the injury when they are in their own home. And the question becomes whether or not a court must apply Spokio or whether it must apply Havens Realty. In Havens Realty, the Coleman plaintiff had no intention of renting an apartment. He was strictly testing a discriminatory practice for the purpose of eradicating it. This court in Tandy applied that.
Could I just stop you on Havens Realty for a second? My understanding is that the tester plaintiff that was deemed to have standing in Havens Realty had gone to the defendant four times and was given incorrect, untruthful, misrepresented information on the because of race four times. Isn't that different from this case?
Havens Realty was about reading the statute by its literal terms, the operative language being any person. This court in Tandy applied that to the ADA on the basis that
I'm asking you, counsel, about Havens Realty, and the statute has the specific language because of race, that the misrepresentation was made because of the tester's race. Now, was the Elk Run Inn's webpage? Can you allege, much less prove, that what was on the webpage was included there because of disability?
The website and the online reservation service failed to provide the information that was required by the regulation, which is a violation of 12182B2A2. And that is also within 12182A, a deprivation of full and equal enjoyment of a service, privilege, or advantage of a place of public accommodation. Havens Realty, many courts have held that Havens Realty is not applicable to the ADA because it was about racial animus and intentional discrimination, as the court has just questioned. But that is contrary to this court's opinion in Tandy, the 11th Circuit's opinion in Houston versus Merritt, and again, this court's opinion in Abercrombie, and then which was followed by a total of six circuits, which held that Havens Realty applies to the ADA. And Havens Realty was about the information, but the way it applied to the ADA was not about information, because most of those cases were about why did the plaintiff intend to, in Tandy, encounter a discriminatory TDD device. Which is informational. And the operative issue that applies Havens Realty to the ADA is not racial animus. It is that one reads the plain and unambiguous language of the statute and applies it. Havens Realty was about the Fair Housing Act, which obviously had different language. The ADA has, you know, its language that applies to disability, and courts apply the clear and plain language of the ADA and look to whether or not there's injury.
Article 3, you know, requires a case or controversy, and, you know, trying to prevent the federal courts from being a forum for hypothetical suits. And, you know, this line of cases, and looks like Ms. Laufer has, you know, looks like dozens of additional cases. And we're trying to tease out whether this is a real case or a hypothetical case. And none of us has any problem with testers, you know, people that have a legitimate grievance under the statute. But, you know, going back to what Judge Matheson said, is it really too much to ask? And really what Lujan and its progeny are all about is it too much to ask a plaintiff to have a contemporaneous, concrete, particular desire to consume this product or services? And if the answer to that is yes, and you put that in your complaint, you know, then we're off to the merits. And we don't have that here. And you want us to adopt a rule based on Havens and Tandy that, you know, basically endorses a hypothetical lawsuit that may be okay under TransUnion and Spokio, but, you know, that really is the implication of it. Waters down the case or controversy requirements to, you know, very, very little in this class of cases.
If I could just make one final point, not on the record. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
It's not on the record, but in July, Laufer made good, and she went to every place she said she was going to go, including Colorado. And she has a niece in Colorado. The reason why she picked Colorado was because she'd been there almost every year for quite a number of years. And she went back in July, and, we could have alleged that, except that if one then makes it about the likelihood that they would go to the hotel, district court opinions are all over the map. And it is almost impossible to, there is no uniform standard. For example, a plaintiff in Fort Lauderdale, who goes to Cocoa Beach just a couple hours away, has been there 100 times before the lawsuit, goes there every other week. There are courts that still say that they lack standing because I don't believe she's going to go. And it becomes almost impossible to enforce the ADA if that becomes the criteria, which comes to whether or not the ADA is enforceable to testers. Because if online reservation services are held to be subject to Spokio and not Havens Realty, essentially it would hold that Spokio has overturned tester standing in the ADA. And that, you know, there's no reason why that wouldn't spill over into other civil rights laws such as Havens Realty and any other discrimination law.
All right, counsel, I appreciate it. It's good to see your cast made appearance. I haven't had that.
I'm so sorry.
I am not a cat.
Yeah, we're not going to record this for social media, so hopefully you're okay. I would hate to see
myself on Fox News for this.
For sure. All right, let's hear from Mr. Rotter. You may proceed.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. I'm Stephen Rotter, and I represent defendants Randy and Cindy Lujper. Thank you for having me. And we've gone over some of this already. This case really is about whether or not plaintiffs established standing merely by suing over a statutory right without alleging an injury in fact. She did not. She suffered no actionable injury. As we've discussed this morning, TransUnion's findings do reiterate the bright line rule requiring a concrete, actual, and particularized injury, which is in fact supported, not controverted, by Spokio Lujan in this court's decision in Colorado Cross Disability Coalition. Earlier, opposing counsel did refer to a line in TransUnion in response to a question by the court. And, you know, part of the paragraph goes on to say, as the court, the Supreme Court emphasized in Spokeo, Article III standing requires a concrete injury, even in the context of a statutory violation. As a trial court found, and so numerous courts around the country, this plaintiff's only interest was attempting to enforce the DOJ guidelines for ADA regulations. She had no personal stake in the matter, did not try to book, and was not going to book.
Wait. Is this just a guideline or is it a regulation? Is that a force of law?
I'm sorry, you cut out, but I think you asked if, so there's the ADA regulation and then the Code of Federal Regulations that the DOJ issued to
implement. You referred to it, my question was, you referred to it as a guideline. Guidelines are enforceable law. I thought there was enforceable law under the regulation.
You're right, Your Honor. I misspoke that. I said DOJ's guidance, not a guideline. I meant their guidance through the regulation.
Okay.
And so I should have stated that better.
Counsel, if we talked with Mr. Bacon about Havens Realty quite a bit, and you haven't really addressed that in your briefing, so I think maybe we better do it now. If the testers in Havens Realty had standing, why not Ms. Laufer here?
There's two reasons, Your Honor. First of all, the plaintiff in Havens was a tester who had a created interest in accurate information by statute in providing that accurate information to any person. The statute can be distinguished because that was for any person. Here, it's only for disabled persons, and that's the limiting factor. Secondly, that plaintiff, as Your Honor pointed out, one of you pointed out, did experience a specific concrete harm over and over again that was linked directly to that interest in receiving accurate information. So unlike the cases that involve statutes that provide a right of action for any person to receive accurate or complete information, like in Havens, ADA cases are different. This is because the ADA regulations, yes, Your Honor?
Go ahead.
It's because those regulations that require accessibility information, they only apply when that information is necessary for a disabled person, such as plaintiff, to actually avail themselves of the goods and services and facilities from the defendant. In other words, the framework for these ADA cases are not based on a global right to be free from disability discrimination. It's a limiting right. It's narrow and specific to be free of disability discrimination only when the plaintiff is actually and in fact denied the full and equal enjoyment of goods and services. So plaintiffs must have to show they're going to avail themselves of those goods and services.
Well, let me break this down. If Judge Matheson hadn't asked his question, I was going to ask the same one. You've made several distinctions here. You've said that here we're dealing with a regulation rather than a statute. Let's hold off on that for a minute. What you just seem to be saying is that the statute doesn't require this information to be disclosed to a disabled person unless the disabled person needs this information for some purpose. And that sounds more like they don't have that the plaintiff doesn't have a cause of action than that the plaintiff doesn't have standing. Let's focus just on the fact that the plaintiff here was not given the information to which she was entitled under the law. How do you distinguish that from Havens? You said that the black tester was injured because what? The only injury to the black tester mentioned in the Havens opinion is not getting accurate information that she was entitled to under the law, under the statute. There's nothing, I thought the record in Havens indicated that the black tester had no interest in renting. What was distinguishable about Havens? Maybe I should back up. If you just read TransUnion, then there's no standing here. But it's significant that TransUnion did not overturn Havens. So that makes you wonder what they're saying in TransUnion. And if you just look at Havens, I don't tell me what's the difference between the injury in Havens to the black tester and the injury here, other than that it was repeated several times.
Right. So I think that is an important distinction, that it was repeated several times. But really? It's also the way, yes.
So if you have three, if you have three non-injuries, that becomes an injury?
Like a strikeout in baseball? No, I think that here part of the problem was district court found that there was no actual belief that an imminent injury was going to occur, that there was this downfield consequence, right? Or downstream consequence, which is what
right, that's in that's TransAmerica says, yeah
but TransUnion addresses that,
and they say TransUnion, excuse me.
No, and they say there needs to be some imminent harm or some down, you know, stream consequence, and the court in
let me stop you there, because I agree with you that language downstream consequence makes it appear that there's not standing here. The problem is we still have the Havens decision, and TransUnion didn't explicitly overturn Havens. That makes me wonder what's going on at the Supreme Court. So just focus on Havens. Can Havens be distinguished?
Right. And Your Honor, my understanding from Havens is that the court did find that there was this downstream consequence, that it was believable and that it was credible and that it was a concrete injury when the tester returned to try and get the information that they were entitled to. I think that's the distinction here. Also, you know, it's not an ADA case. And as I said, and I know you wanted to go back to this, I do think the statute that we're, the regulation here, not only requires you to be disabled in order to avail yourself of this regulation and have a right to sue, but it also requires that missing piece here, that the plaintiff has to actually suffer the concrete injury, because it's either imminent harm, this downstream consequence, or an articulation or allegation of how they wanted to actually book a room, how she wanted to book a room and go there. I do have another point.
I've got a related question. In addition to trying to see where or determine where Havens Realty fits these days in light of recent Supreme Court cases, I'm also interested in the information injury argument that Ms. Laufer has been making. If she had a legal right under the ADA and the regulation to information about accessibility, and she didn't get it, why isn't that enough for standing under the information injury cases like Aikens and Public Citizen, both of which Ms. Laufer relies upon? It seems to me that we're trying to figure out where the older precedent fits now. And Havens Realty is central to the discussion from this morning's arguments, but also that we have these other cases about information injury. What do we do with those?
Well, I think you're right in raising that point, because I think we're in a day and age where we have these outdated statutes and regulations that need to be, promulgated in a way that we're recognizing the use of website and technology to book rooms and to help those that are disabled. I get that. But here, when you're asking about the informational injury, it again goes back to the fact that it's like a tree falling in a forest, right? I mean, if she was never going to use the information, it doesn't matter that the information wasn't correct for her.
And why did it matter in these other cases?
Because they demonstrated a concrete injury.
How is there a concrete injury in Federal Election Commission versus Aikens?
My understanding in that case is that the court found that that lack of information specifically prevented people at that time from an imminent harm that they were going to experience, right? That the court said, listen, this is imminent and this is real, and they connected the dots.
What was the harm other than not getting the information?
Not having the knowledge to leverage that information for their voting rights. You know, it is a nuanced issue. I understand that. And, you know, I did want to address the fact that Mr. Bacon talked about his client, you know, traveling to Colorado. And certainly if she is standing now, you know, that is a different case. And that's something different. And if we look at standing as a whole, too, and this is something we didn't address, is redressability, right? This is a third prong. I'll have you know that defendant's place of lodging was built actually before the ADA and its amendments were promulgated. Their motel, therefore, did not even need to have disability accessibility, and they don't have to have disabled rooms. So when we allege that the plaintiff was unable to get information that should have been on the website, the fact of the matter is, what information is that? The absence of information.
No. You get information, you know, I'm disabled. I don't want to stay there because they don't have facilities for me.
She did get the information she needed to know whether or not she could stay there because there was a lack of information on the website. And I've heard opposing counsel in these cases argue that motel websites should then list everything they're lacking. Well, you know, the ADA guidelines and regulations are like 3 inches thick. I mean, not only would that be bad website advertising for all these motels, but it's not what the law intended. We do have this.
Isn't that a merits issue rather than a standing issue?
It goes to redressability, I think. But I agree. I just wanted to cover that a little bit so that the court better understands the factual background here. But you're absolutely right. I mean, there was no concrete injury here to plaintiff. I think you guys hit the nail on the head when you spoke with Mr. Bacon earlier. So I'm, you know, I rest my side of the argument.
Just restate how you evade the clutches of Candy. Help us out there.
Yes, Your Honor. I'm grabbing my notes for Candy. So it's the same way the trial court distinguished it. This circuit held that there was an injury in fact in Tandy because the hearing impaired plaintiff was not able to use an inoperable TDD system, which is used to provide hearing impaired patrons necessary information to access the bus system. That's different because, as the trial court said, there's no nexus between her personal actions to actually come here and the informational injuries she's alleging. She had no intention, and it goes beyond intention. She did not book a room or take any action to provide a nexus between the informational injury and her inability to book a room and come here. And the trial court expands on that argument I don't have the page's number in front of me, but that's her decision can be referred to for more detail.
All right, counsel, there's nothing else. I appreciate your arguments. Very interesting case, those were helpful. And you are excused and the case is submitted.